Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. Please welcome the hilarious and talented Danny Palumbo!
Yeah! Have some fun with it. It's me, Danny Palumbo, a.k.a. Pecorino Marino, a.k.a. Tony Rigatoni.
Hey,
there he is.
What's up?
I got pasta Rigatoni aliases.
I know.
Those are great, man.
Let them know. What's one for Farfalle? Well, we can think of another one.
Yeah, bow tie pasta? I don't know.
Yeah, right. Anyway, what's new, man?
Nothing, man. Just chilling. Doing all the credits that y'all mentioned. That's the first time somebody mentioned every single thing I've done before.
Hey,
yeah, that was it.
I was impressed by all of them. I don't normally do the whole list, but those are all fucking dope.
Well, I needed it because I don't have the one knockout that's like, you've seen him on Conan.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to mention all
of those to come together to make a mighty fist, Daniel.
Yes.
A knockout blow.
Yes, if you will. A check swing that gets called strike, if
Oof.
You will.
Oof.
Yeah, I feel for the Giants fans. It was like a magical season. They were it came out of nowhere to have the best record in baseball. And then, yeah, I was turning to my dad is in town. So it was fun watching baseball with the old man. And I just kept turning to him being like, what?
Believe this shit?
The Dodgers are getting some calls here, and then they got the ultimate call that put them on through to the next round.
Yeah.
And a check swing that wasn't a strike,
it was stressful,
but they called
though.
It. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I felt for everyone, even like when, whether we were at bat or the Giants were at bat, you're like, fuck, dude, every single throw is like mattering right now.
Yeah.
And like a fucking, like a strike three call felt like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you going to come back from everything? The stakes. But that's what I love about this time of year in baseball, that the stakes are at their highest.
Mostly I felt for E40. Mm. That was, yeah.
You mean Corey Booker?
What is something from your search history?
Yes. Most recently I searched, how soon can I start packing before a move? And this tells you a few major things about me. One, most obviously, it tells you that I'm moving in the future. It is, at the time of recording, it's Shocktober 18th. I'm not moving until December 31st. It's very far out there. And so this also tells you I'm not planning on anything resembling like an in-home social life for the next several months. I've written off my future.
Right.
Like it's going to be just boxes and nowhere to sit for a while. And most tellingly, I think it reminds everyone that I'm, even in my mid-30s, I'm still very focused on like, what is the normal way to go about doing things? I want to make sure, even if I don't follow it, I want to be aware of what it is. So that's like, Google is my non-judgmental friend where I can just go like, what's a normal way for a human to move? Right. And then it tells me like, oh, okay, good. It's good to know. It's Google suggests, by the way, 2 to 3 weeks before the move, which is okay. Not what I'm
insufficient Google
now. Yeah.
I'm getting severe, doesn't sleep the night before a flight.
Yes.
Vibes from you, like just kind of packs and repacks. Yeah, that's smart. It's better than the alternative, which I have engaged in many times, which is just kind of throwing everything into a garbage bag.
Yeah.
And then throwing that in the back of a U-Haul.
Yeah. Those first moves in or right after college is when you're like just packing up the construction bags. You're like, boxes? Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, man, I'll put all these books and pans in a fucking garbage bag and throw them in a truck.
Yeah. And the amount of things, when I left LA for New York, it was a very quick move. And there are so many things that I'm like, well, then I'll just go without a calendar and I throw it out. Like things that I would sooner get rid of than like bother finding a new box for it. And then as soon as I am in my new place and I'm boiling water, oh, shit. I need a, need a calendar.
Yeah. Did you try the thing where you just like break the cap or the lid of the thing very slightly and then dump half the pasta out?
Cracking the lid.
Yeah, cracking the lid, but it's completely insufficient replacement.
Or
for
the steam creeps out and burns the part of your hand and then you let go and it's on the sink. And you're like, just a fucking failure.
Fortunately, there are sweatshirts for that.
Side note.
You can just...
Today is, we forgot to mention up top, National Seafood Bisque Day, just to let everybody
know.
That's what we're celebrating today.
Is that October 18th or 19th?
19th.
Shocked.
I know we're
19th.
Recording October it then, 19th. But it's, look, a little peek behind the curtain.
Sorry.
As we
that.
Celebrate this, it will be National Seafood Bisque Day.
And you did mention it was Shocktober. Is that a do you celebrate? Are you an observer of Shocktober?
I don't really care for Halloween. It's not like a big holiday for me, but anytime someone says October, very academically correcting them to Shocktober is very fun to me. I really enjoy that.
Shocktober. Yep.
Yeah.
Wait, is there something, is that a real thing or that's just a colloquialism for just because it's spooky October, we call it Shocktober? Or is there like an actual phenomenon I'm missing out on?
Not that I know of. I think it's one of those things that was like Shocktober at Knott's Scary Farm.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which they really fucked up with the naming of that because it just sounds like it's any other day at Knott's Berry Farm, which is not scary.
Yes.
It's wow.
Not, but it's a sound like
scary.
Beza, what is something you think is overrated?
Okay. Controversial. Mm. I feel like going out in your 20s, like that whole, all of the going out in your 20s is overrated. Like you think you're going to have an awesome night and then like, as I get older and now I don't go out anymore, you know, like go to clubs and bars anymore, really. And I like, I realize like how overrated is I wait in line, I get dressed, especially if you're single, you go with a bunch of guys, you get embarrassed by the bouncer before you get in, you spend $18 on a beer.
Yeah.
And then like you spend $18 on a beer, you try to talk to one girl, she says no, then you're embarrassed to talk to the rest of the night, and then you sit, listen to a lot of music, you can't talk, the booth sucks, you don't have a table. It just sucks. Like you go home and then you're like, that was dope, right? That was a wild night. You know, like it wasn't wild. We stood around in a corner, nobody danced. It was just boring.
It was like, yeah, and if you guys, I'm getting tired, can you go home so I can put on some Joker makeup and record some TikToks? Just to cap the night off. So what I like to do when I get shut down at the bar, I get on my Joker shit at home.
I just feel like I look back now, and I was reminded of this when I saw the movie Sorry to Bother You. And like, if you remember, like he goes to like this back like VIP entrance and he has no fun, and like he's sitting in a shitty booth and the drink sucks and the people are, it's just no fun at all. And then he comes out and they're like, how was it? And he was like, it was dope.
Right, right. Right.
And it's like, that's what we're, I feel like that's what we're supposed to say, because we spent so much money and so much time and so much effort doing this thing. But I feel like all of that going out in your 20s when you're in your 30s is like overrated.
Wow.
We got to acknowledge you got a cat in the background.
I'm so sorry. The cat is going crazy because
it's good.
No, I have cats too. And I'm like, are my cats?
It's because, like, no, I know why. It's because I came out the room and came right upstairs to do this podcast. So I have completely ignored her. And so she is downstairs knocking everything down off a table. Like, if you knock down off a table,
like, and meowing pens around and shit. Yeah.
She's batting pens around. She's knocking computer chargers off. She's just knocking everything she can.
Do you think there's in that time though, right? Like, I'm trying to think of what the value is, because I certainly didn't learn much when I was going out. I learned what the limits were of like my physical ability to consume like alcohol and drugs, but I wasn't like, man, I learned a lesson tonight at the club, y'all.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like just the loud music in particular makes it impossible to communicate, and then it's just a weird psychological experiment, because you just like are purely like, you can't even really think, you can't talk to other people.
Right.
I think the loud music is designed to make you just drink more, but I don't know, man. After a while I just started finding places that didn't play loud music.
I have more fun at
few and far between.
Yeah. More fun at house parties or places that play a lot of music. I like that stuff now even. You know, what's also interesting is like, I'm not a tall guy, right? And so most men are taller than me. And then most women, when they go out, wear heels that make them taller than me. So when I go into a place and I'm like, damn, I'm the shortest person in here. Like, that's also a weird, it's not a great feeling. It's just like, I'm like, man, like.
But you have more to offer than your height, Bezod. You
know? I know, but like,
I don't look at you and go, look at that man who's all short.
The world of of people in their 20s don't often care about
that. Oh, no, absolutely. It's toxic. That's why, like, the thing about the club is, like, when I'd go, when I look back and think about what my whole vibe was in there, it was so performative. It was like, yeah, I'm up in here. Yeah, I'm in this section, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Spending the last $3 on my debit card.
Exactly.
To, like, ball out and maybe overdraft, but I'm not going to tell nobody in here.
My roommate in my 20s in Chicago worked at a club, and he was like, do you know how many rental car keys there are in the back? Like the valet. He was like, people are renting cars for the weekend.
Oh, just to pull up?
Pull up and like pick their, he's like, you know, they rent a car, they go pick up their lady, they pull in the thing, boom, 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 boom. And it's like, it's all fake.
Right. They're like, why do you have that big old chunky Hertz navigation system bolted to your dashboard? You're like, I don't know, man. I think somebody pranked me.
See, my cat has been quiet now that I'm holding her and giving her attention.
Yeah.
Very cute cat. What's your cat's name?
This is Gianna Gigi Bryant, named after Kobe's daughter who passed. I got her the same week that she passed.
Damn. Yeah. I feel like it's, just, you know, you have the thought stopping it with the music. You have, like, everybody's just trying to behave like other people, so they're blending in. It's like military training in there. Yeah, everyone's just trying to.
Yeah, but it's funny. Actually, I don't mean to say I didn't learn anything, because I learned very quickly that performative swag vibes and shit was not for me, and was actually like so empty, because it kind of takes that thing where, like, when you're younger and you covet the club. You're like, I want to be there. I want to be up in
exactly.
it. And I can't wait to be up in it. I'm going to do this shit my way. Then you go and you're like, this is fucking not for me.
Yeah.
Kind of very quickly begin to learn. So yeah, I learned who I was thanks to privilege on Sunset Boulevard.
It's amazing to think about what I enjoy now, what I look forward to now. Like, I look forward to coming home, cooking a meal, watching a Netflix show that I'm looking for. You know what I mean? Like, I look forward to it that I would have in my 20s. It's like, oh, I can't wait to go to this club that I'm going to wait in line for 45 minutes in the cold before the dude lets me in, so I can stand in a corner and not talk to anybody.
Right.
Yeah. What is something you think is underrated?
The national parks of this beautiful country. I think I've probably gone on about this on this show before, but we just had a friend get married in Yosemite. And dude, as easy as it is to like hate America right now and what it stands for, just go look at it, dude. It's so beautiful. And honestly, like, I know fans of this show are probably fans of progressive politics or you just listen to get really angry about progressive politics. But national parks are progressive politics done well. It's just perfect, man. And like, it honestly just fuels my soul, dude. I've been like going, and it got me through the pandemic. And we were in Yosemite and we went on the Hetch Hetchy hike, which is the reservoir that gives San Francisco all its drinking water. Mm-hmm. And it was just dope, man. Like, just learning about the attitudes of this country and how they've shifted. So like, Hetch Hetchy used to be a valley, and then they flooded it after the San Francisco fires. None of this I knew before this wedding, by the way. So San Francisco, there was like a huge public debate. And at the time, this is the early 1900s, the prevailing public opinion was that the wilderness is something to be conquered. Very like manifest destiny sort of attitude. Like, it's us versus nature, right? We got to go conquer that shit and show who's the boss, who's the king of the fucking world.
Yeah. And dry up all the rivers and lakes and then turn the things that aren't rivers and lakes into rivers and lakes.
That's right. Just because we can. Because
like, we're fucking men.
Yeah, we got to gentrify the woods and, you know, make deer go find somewhere else to live.
Exactly.
And so, but then there was this guy, John Muir, M-U-I-R, I don't know how to say it, I just read it. Yeah, and he was one of the early preservationists, you know what I mean? And like, they kind of reached this compromise with Hetch Hetchy because San Francisco burned down and they were like, bro, we need water. And so they kind of like worked together to create this situation that worked well for nature and for people. And I was just so fascinated, man. And by the end, I was like, I honestly needed to hear about a time where people like came together and solved a problem. And you know what I mean? And so National Parks, got to take advantage, man. Everyone listening.
We did so much work in the like New Deal era, like the one time that America was able to like consolidate behind progressive and, you know, socialist ideals. And we're just coasting off of that shit like ever since and like slowly undoing that progress.
Man. And it's just like, it's the shit that like, it should be bipartisan. You know what I mean? Like, I've been in national parks and seeing dudes in MAGA hats walking around. And I'm just like, so I know you love this,
right?
But you know that the guy, he wants to drill this for oil. You know that, right?
Right. Like,
he
wants to drill this for good. That's not here, though. That's bear's ears. It's like, well, that's also a national park and monument. What?
Yeah. They're looking for good drilling spots. That's what they're doing there.
Yeah. I love the idea of a Republican who goes to Sedona to heal on the vortexes. Like, who's that guy?
Right.
Who is this cross section of humanity?
Yeah.
It's Kirsten Sinema, probably.
Yeah.
To be honest.
It's libertarians.
Have you been to the Muir Woods in Mill Valley?
No, but it obviously is named after him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, where is
Big
that?
Big Daddy John Muir, Mill Valley up in the Bay Area.
I got to do that. That'll be next really on the beautiful list. I love it up there, man.
Yeah.
Bay Area.
Yeah. Your overrated and underrated are sort of at cross purposes, because I feel like a lot of the good park space in a lot of the cities around the country are golf courses that we need to invade and just claim as parks that we can use. This is, I bring it up a lot. It's from a Malcolm Gladwell podcast, but it's like the one Gladwell idea that I was like, fuck yeah, man. Nailed it.
Take
He's
them
got
back.
It.
How many tax breaks are we giving these places? What the
We're
fuck
paying
are these
them to keep a part, like a bunch of the best land in the middle of the city as a private thing that we're not allowed to go into. Like, that's the Love deal it. That we got. So let's,
it's crazy.
Yeah. But I won't tell your golf course buddies that you said that shit. Cause
I mean, I'll be honest. Look at me, dude. They know. They know I'm a mole.
Yeah.
They can tell. The way I look out at the green, I'm like, you know, we could really plant some beautiful acorn bearing oak trees. Like, shut up and hit
what
the ball.
What if we rewilded this space?
Yeah, I look like a guy who lived where they built the golf course, and I'm coming out to this is my land.
Right. Also,
yeah. Also, you can't put on pants goofy enough to make them trust you.
They're like, oh, those are cool golf spikes, Kenny. What do you call those? Oh, those are Birkenstocks. pretty standard.
I call them yuppie stompers. Get off my land.
Do you even know whose ancestral land this is?
Me, a white man.
Mine.
Emphasis on the H in white.
Yeah.
White.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and we're riding the roller coaster of Danielle's relationship with her cats. Apparently, they're causing all sorts of havoc. My guess, they know that it's National Make a Dog's Day Day, but
taking back the power, yeah,
taking back the power. They're like, no, fuck this. All right, let's get into the the third announcement from Donald Trump about how he's going to change the landscape of media. He has announced Trump Media Technology Group because he believes he can take down big tech by creating a worse product that can't compete at all with Netflix, Twitter, and even a company called iHeartMedia. He's coming for us.
In this
coming
chart.
For us.
I've heard of iHeartMedia.
I haven't, but somehow this man has. And yeah, he also thinks he can go after Amazon's cloud service and like Stripe for like payments and stuff. This is all because he thinks that he can create like essentially an uncancelable internet infrastructure. So if no matter how racist or vile you are, they can't say like, well, we're going to take this hosting service away from you, or we're going to take this way of processing payments away from you, because he'll have his own versions and that will shield them from any kind of real scrutiny or criticism. Mm-hmm. But the big one, I think, that was announced today was the Truth Social platform. Truth Social.
Get ready. Let's just give a real quick background on like his. So this is the third in a series. First, it was From the Desk Of, where he would be issuing communications to publish straight from the desk of Donald Trump. And it was a blog. And like he just didn't, maybe he hadn't heard of those and he thought he was inventing them. But that barely got any attention. And so that went away. In July, this is one I didn't even know about, he quietly launched a new social media platform called Getter, which really should be the name of Larry the Cable Guy's social media platform. But he went for it, G-E-T-T-R, and that apparently fell apart, which, you know, he's taking a lot of swings. He's just letting loose. And now he's announced his third, an app dubbed Truth, because, he thinks that the truth is, I don't know, this is pretty in line with his overall strategy of like naming things the exact opposite of what they are.
Yeah, right. And, like saying he's a president rather than a despotic fucking imbecile or something.
Wait, is Donald Trump the president?
It depends on which news channel you watch.
Yes.
Because there seem to be competing narratives. But like with the truth thing, predictably, right? Posting to the site will be called truthing, and fucking each individual post will be known as a truth. So I get that they're fully trying to take any meaning out of that word truth by being like, yeah, I retruthed that truth from earlier. Who's your favorite truther? Oh, yeah, I need some good accounts for some funny truths to follow on Truth Social.
He has trademarked the term truthing and retruth, which is pretty cool.
Well, that's nice.
You'd hope that it would be something a little bit more interesting than that. But of course, this makes sense because you say absolute lie and you call that your truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shockingly, I know this is going to hold on to your butts, everyone. The project launched a beta and people took a look a little behind the curtains, and it was seemingly done as cheaply and lazily as possible. The site's code is a, quote, mostly unmodified version of Mastodon, which is an open source software launched in 2016.
And also a band that's very cool.
But anyone can use this. Like, I could use this to launch my own social networking site. That's basically what they did. They just took that open source software, didn't even make any modifications to it. So it was extremely easy for people to immediately hack into. Although you didn't really need to hack into it, they launched the beta and people could immediately just sign up for accounts with the handles at Donald Trump and at Mike Pence and at Donald J. Trump. Somebody got that one and immediately posted a photo of a pig defecating on its testicles.
Yep, that old Twitter.
I kind of hate that, but I love it, but I hate it.
Well, it's just kind of, they've nailed the perfect visual metaphor for what is happening here.
Yeah, and it's been a common sort of troll reply on Twitter too for just spamming threads with that image because people are like, I want to get it off of here. But yeah, it's clear that like everything, just not much thought put into it. It's really about the optics of saying like, this is what I'm going to do and this is when it's coming out. There might be a beta open for some people like at the like sort of end of the year, but the plans are that this thing is launching in 2022. But there's also like really weird guidelines within the website too. Like the slides about like the sort of presentation of the website is like, it's a big tent. It's for everyone. Liberals, conservatives, independents can all come through. But then there's like this fine print that's like, truth can like revoke and deactivate your account for any reason without you knowing, without even us having to explain. So don't talk shit on here. You're gone.
You're literally prohibited from disparaging the site or, and this is a quote, annoying the site's employees.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's very annoying. There was a cartoon on SNL that they took down that was basically like about how Disney owned everything.
Right.
Like this graphic reminds me of that cartoon.
Yeah.
Just with all the other brands there.
Yeah. And just taking everything over. The graphic in question has TMTG with like a line to Truth Social versus, and then it's like Twitter, Facebook. And then in a separate like media content production section, it's TMTG Plus, which competes with Netflix and Disney Plus. I don't know how they get it. The plus is brilliant.
Like Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Come on.
Wait, you
right
think so?
There.
You think so?
To go along with fucking Trump flicks, you know, it's all going to be there. Yeah, was, and HBO MAGA.
Yeah, that's pretty good, actually. They should have done that. TMTG News is the one that's coming for our ass for iHeart and CNN. That's kind of a flex. Shout out to iHeart.
I mean, I think because purely all of these things are just pointing at are like sort of superlatives, like within a given industry. So it's right. Like if it's streaming, you're going to put the streaming people there. And if it's radio or podcasting, then they're mentioning this behemoth company. So, yeah, it's we look forward to your network, although I feel like they're already out there.
The long term opportunity, TMTG tech stack, which just sounds like some words they made up and put in front of him. But he was like, nice. I love a tech stack.
TMTG tech stack, yeah.
Yeah, like you said, they're coming for Amazon Cloud Computing and Google Cloud.
Right.
So, you know, they got big
and
things.
Is it proprietary code for your platform? No, just ripped off Mastodon.
Right.
Oh, okay. So some real pioneering type shit happening over here. Good to know.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about just a little bit of news around the green energy possibilities, how we could possibly fight climate change, make the world a little bit more sustainable. So, you know, as Congress debated last week whether to pare down the Biden administration's climate proposals, and spoiler alert, they did. New research has suggested doing so would create far fewer jobs. If you pared it down and just kept going with fossil fuel, kept doubling down, for every $1 million the U.S. government invests, solar produces over 2.7 times more jobs than fossil fuels, according to an analysis from two environmental think tanks and labor unions. Wind energy spurs over 2.8 times more jobs than the investments in oil, gas, and coal. Retrofitting buildings to be more energy efficient creates demand for nearly three times as many jobs. So these are, it's not a issue of, well, you know, fossil fuels is like the thing that's good for the economy. The only excuse that they have for continuing to double down on fossil fuels is that fossil fuels have the money and therefore the inertia to keep them moving in the same direction they've been moving in for a century.
It's just wild that this analysis just negates any argument that would come out of this lobbying side of being like, well, then what happens to all these people's jobs, man? If you get rid of coal, then what happens? And you're like, yeah, there's actually there. Even if those people fucking cleaved themselves like a cell and turned into two people, that person would also have a job.
Right. Exactly.
Because that's how lucrative and how much opportunity is there, because we have a massive undertaking to change the energy mix.
Yeah. And we actually have a like specific example of, you know, a way that we could be changing things and helping the environment and helping economies. But before we get to that, Danielle's internet just went out, unfortunately. And, you know, we're hoping that she is able to get back in here. But always wonderful having Danielle. Hopefully it comes back. She's working on getting back on as we speak,
momentarily. If we're hoping to be rejoined, but this is the
if
wonder
not,
of
Miles and I are full of enough hot air to push this thing through to the
speak for yourself, man.
A real windbag, am I right? All right, let's talk really briefly about the dependency ratio, just because I think it continues to be one of the most underrated kind of forces or explanations in kind of macroeconomics in the modern world. There's a story in the New York Times about how China's economy has continued to slow, and it like focuses on steel mills facing power cuts and computer chip shortages and, you know, troubled property companies. There's like a big real estate kind of meltdown happening in China, but it doesn't mention anywhere this thing that I always I come back to, like, this is on par with the British coal gas study, and Tom Hanks peeing in every movie is like a thing I just bring up at every opportunity that I get. But yeah, and Havana Syndrome as well. But it's basically like you put working age people on one side of a scale, you put people who are too young or too old to work on the other side. And the more that the working age people outweigh the other people, the dependents, which is called, why it's called the dependency ratio, the stronger the economy like tends to perform over a long period of time. And if you like, this basically explains the 20th century, like the US's like unprecedented baby boom was working its way through working age during when America's like economy really took off. And now that they're all hitting retirement age, it's starting to slow down. And China, like, is a really interesting example of this because they did the one-child experiment. Like, their one-child policy was basically a way to kind of force a really favorable dependency ratio by sort of artificially shrinking the number of dependents. And so they had this huge population of people who are going through working age and then much smaller dependents and can be seen as fueling their massive economic growth. But now that big like chunk of working age people is hitting retirement. So it's like, as I'm trying to explain it, I'm starting to see why it's not raised that much because it's kind of boring. But I think it's also like it takes some of the agency and like heroism and like the sort of like deserving out of America's economic success, and particularly the economic success of the baby boomers, like the idea that they're just like a lucky demographic cohort is probably like something that baby boomers are allergic to. And they're, you know, still, even though the median population of America is 38, I think if you like look at the median population of powerful people in the country, it's probably squarely in the heart of like the baby boomer set. And I just feel like that generation's entire worldview wants to believe that they are special and better than everyone and earned their financial success.
Broadly.
Yeah, just broadly speaking.
Because we know, we don't, and I love when the boomers I gang come through and they're like, I'm not like the other boomers. We're like,
sure.
You listen to our terrible show.
Right. There's no way. But yeah, I mean, and then I also think like just the one child policy is a very like, I don't know, is one of the strangest or like most kind of inexplicable policies. If you just totally take the dependency ratio out of the equation, it's just, and I feel like we'd never really think about like why they did that or how it relates to their financial success.
So what does that mean for us?
It just means that, so what, one detail that kind of jumped out at me, other than like, I think it, like, there's a relationship between like America's like white supremacy and their ability to just be like, ah, China doing the one child policy, that's weird. They're weird. Just like not thinking about it any further. It also relates to immigration policy because U.S., like one of the main forces that is keeping the U.S. median age like and dependency ratio in a good place is the, you know, massive immigration, or, you know, the urge for immigration that the GOP like wants to fight against. And it just seems coincidental or not coincidental that the people who are like the most like baby boomer ass party, the GOP, wants to like fight against immigration, and they're also the ones who would like most want to ignore the financial realities of like the dependency ratio being the reason that they have their success. But that's kind of one of the reasons that people think that the dependency ratio is going to hit China harder than the US's by 2050. Like, the US's population is supposed to, you know, grow by quite a bit because of the dependency ratio, and China's is supposed to shrink because of people are more likely to leave the country than want to come there. So that's that story.
And that's all I have to say about that.
And one child policy, base level, we agree is a bad idea.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right.
Yes.
Because at one point you're like, and this one child policy, and then there was a long pause, and then you landed like on
pretty
so strange. I was like, yeah, strange. Yeah. Keep going, though.
Very. Very
really
awful.
Quirky.
Yeah, they were kind of quirky. But
I don't want to say authoritarian.
Right.
Just forward thinking.
Like, what were they? Yeah. Yeah. No.
They were really looking at that, though, huh? Gotta give it up. No, I think it's funny, too, because there's immigration is such one of these issues in the country where it's looked at as like it's the end of the country. But no one acknowledges that so many of the great things about this place is that it's because of people coming here from different places, whether that's just the opportunity it provides or, you know, cuisine. I think for a lot of people who are like, man, fuck immigrants, realize a lot of the food you're eating that you even think is American is because of this melting pot that the United States became. And then also on top of it, I think that's the other part they don't talk about is the financial aspect for people who are so focused on like the economy of it all. Like if you were just actually playing with facts and figures, like, no, okay, yeah, this we can handle more people being here. But it's also this fear of a brown or not so alabaster white America that fears a lot of or drives a lot of the fear around it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and just in relation to World War II, like I think
Miles, cover your ears.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. The fact that the US had this massive population boom and generation, you know, the baby boom that drove their financial success well. And we were just like, and we took credit for winning World War II, while Russia, who actually you know, all of their working age people like died in World War II while actually doing a lot of the, you know, horrible work that was required to win that is also a pretty big, you know, reason that the U.S. ended up winning the Cold War, or at least like outlasting the USSR. But again, not the sort of thing that people in the U.S. want to acknowledge, especially in like the mainstream media. All right. Yeah. Miles, you can start listening again.
All right. What happened? I'm just watching that movie Enemy at the Gates with Jude Law. I hope it doesn't spoil anything. I feel like it was only like recently, like in the last couple of years, where like someone on TV was like, no, we only won the war because of Russia. You know that, right? And people were like, huh? Like suddenly, like if it was as if people like it was anathema to everyone's like, oh my, what did this person say that is a historian that is acknowledging what happened on the Eastern Front? Okay, but I don't think it's still built. It's part of our idea that we dropped bomb, people gave up, we beat Hitler. Good night.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy that all those boomers helped Russia win the war. that Russia never would have done it if the boomers hadn't just told them, go ahead and do it, please.
Yeah.
Right.
Hit after hit from that generation.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about Jesus Ween.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season. And guess what? So are we. Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and challenge all-star.
And speaking of all-stars, All Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and let's talk Netflix. The CEO, Ted Sarandos, has been in a bit of a shitstorm since last week as he just like kind of continues to completely fumble the backlash against Dave Chappelle's just horribly transphobic BS special, the Closer. So Sarandos kicked things off by essentially saying that Netflix pushes boundaries. And
the comedy does, man.
Yeah. They ended up like they had a conflict with a trans employee who was unhappy with their employer's actions and suspended and then unsuspended that employee and was like, oh, I had nothing to do with that. We just suspend people. All the
time. It was because they were vocal about criticizing the company. It was like this whole other thing. And yeah, it's getting worse now. Like he put out a letter to employees trying to explain the mess away and how it's really not that bad because Netflix also has like stuff with like gay people too. So that's chill. And he said, this is in this letter, quote, adults can watch violence, assault and abuse or enjoy shocking stand-up comedy without it causing them to harm others. We are working hard to ensure marginalized communities aren't defined by a single story. So we have Sex Education, Orange is the New Black, Control Z, Hannah Gadsby and Dave Chappelle all on Netflix. Key to this is increasing diversity on the content team itself. Hannah Gadsby did not appreciate being deployed as a defense token in this fucking lame argument and posted, quote, hey, Ted Sarandos, just a quick note to let you know that I would prefer if you didn't drag my name into your mess. Now I have to deal with even more of the hate and anger that Dave Chappelle's fans like to unleash on me every time Dave gets $20 million to process his emotionally stunted partial worldview. You didn't pay me nearly enough to deal with the real-world consequences of the hate speech dog whistling you refuse to acknowledge, Ted. Fuck you and your amoral algorithm cult. I do shits with more backbone than you. That's just a joke. I definitely didn't cross a line because you just told the world there isn't one.
Wow. Damn, that was good. That was a good tweet. Was that a tweet?
No, it was a. I think it was a, oh, yeah. maybe a IG, like an IG
okay.
post.
Right, yeah, right, right. Yeah.
But the referencing of like, I like that, you know, Hannah's calling out this just tired ass defense. Like, these things don't lead to real world harm, okay?
Yeah. Right.
And having a very limited definition of what harm is, you right. know? As he says, this is his further, you know, defense of like this harm argument. Quote, the strongest evidence to support this is that violence on screens has grown hugely over the last 30 years, especially with first party shooter games. First party. and yet violent crime has fallen significantly in many countries. Adults can watch violence and blah, 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 blah without harming others. So that was like the first part. You know, you can still get Birth of a Nation or Triumph of the Will through their disc based rental service. Just right. so you know. But also, yeah. like a lot of people are pointing out, is like, have you seen this own documentary that's on Netflix that you put out called Disclosure, which the subheading is, in this documentary, leading trans creatives and thinkers share heartfelt perspectives and analysis about Hollywood's impact on the trans community. I think
that's just like your opinion, man. You know,
that's like your opinion, it's... man, on my own platform.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was just having a conversation with a friend over dinner about this last night, who's also a comedian. It's so like comedians, a lot of them can't make the connection between like the thing they're saying and then also violence. Like to them, there's just not the straight line at right. all. And it's like really fucking infuriating. Also, the people that really, I would say, would you say there's like a Venn diagram of people that hated Hannah Gadsby's special and then also people that like
defend
Chappelle?
Yeah,
and it's absolutely. Like, if you didn't think that was comedy,
right.
Like, what do you think right. that is? Like, and I watched right. the whole thing too, and it was like long point making, pauses, diatribes is like what it reads like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like super yeah. hypocritical.
And granted, you know, the whole thing wasn't just a screed against the LGBTQ community, but right. what it was it was not a comedy special. When you look at his other specials, it's a completely yeah. different person and a different kind of performance.
Yeah.
And it's truly just someone, as Gatsby says, it's just sort of like trying to process their limited worldview on stage for a couple of million bucks.
Yeah.
Yep. And a lot of people said, look, if for all the people who want to make the content doesn't cause harm nonsense, a lot of them just gestured at 13 Reasons Why. You know, many child development experts and psychologists criticized the show for its depiction of a teenager taking their own life. And they said it could possibly very well and most likely would lead to copycat incidents. And then a damning study was released. According to the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, in March 2017, which was a month after the show debuted, there's a 28.9% increase in suicide among Americans ages 10 to 17. And it completely right. was like an outlier based on statistical trends and things yeah. like that. And obviously, again, correlation isn't causation. But it was definitely enough for Netflix to say, okay, let's reconsider something. And they just did the minimum by adding a warning card.
Too rich, not enough people telling them to shut the fuck up, I think, is often yes. what happens. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bummer, man.
Harm isn't just about walking up to someone and committing a violent hate crime. You know what I mean? And I think yeah. that's how people excuse that this isn't bad, that this doesn't arrive to that level of the hate speech or something like that. I would say anything that is contributing to the slowing of progress is in and of itself a violent outcome for somebody. Because yeah. normalizing the othering of trans people through edgy comedy specials directly contributes to people not seeing the humanity of these people.
Right.
And
yes.
it's just a punchline. And I'm curious, right. would Chappelle defend a white comic's use of minstrelsy tropes or doing blackface?
Right.
Because right. people laughed at that shit, but it's the same thing. Blackface was used to dehumanize Black Americans. Right. And at the time, people called that comedy, entertainment. But yep. the insidious part is what it does is it creates a baseline for a level of being able to perceive someone as a human who's deserving of dignity or not. And if you are fucking with that and you are trying to pump the brakes on that by saying shit like I'm team turf and all this other shit and trying to make your point about how like trying to deny someone the agency of fucking gender expression, you're directly opposed to progress, to liberation for people. So in that sense, you're not yeah. fucking saying anything clever. You're not speaking truth to power or anything like that. Yeah. And if you're talking about a point, you know, like good comedy that's edgy and causes conversation is typically pointing out an absurdity of our society or culture, right? That people are like, damn, right. That is an absurd thing that is going on that we're not really looking at critically. At best, Chappelle is saying that it's absurd that trans women think they are women.
Yeah,
that's it. Right. And that's only, that would only appear as an absurd notion to someone that wants to deny a person the agency of gender expression. That's not saying anything larger about this. So that's why I'm like, I'm failing to see where you understand the hegemonic dimensions of all this and where power yeah. lies and what direction you're trying to skew the, like, make a point.
Right. I mean, he's just making the same point over and over again. And it's just him gesturing at his anxiety around something that deep down he knows is wrong and fucked up and he hasn't dealt with it. But like in the same way that, you know, you look back at, you know, minstrel shows and you're like, how is this comedy? Like it doesn't make sense now, but it was because it addressed like some deep anxiety of people realizing like what they were, like their worldview was incredibly fucked up. I think that it's the same thing. It's like, I don't really even see how this is a joke, but it's like basically like touching on a thing that I think culturally he, like we realize is fucked up and that like he's struggling with like five levels deep in his consciousness yeah. and like can't process. And that's why he keeps fucking coming back to it and just being wrong and strong on that,
man.
And
it's just, there's like almost no in between with like comedy anymore. It's like people are either tripping on a banana peel or they're like trying to start a cult or something. There's like right. no in between, like at all. I miss yeah. people tripping on a banana peel.
Yeah, what happened to pratfalls, huh?
Yeah, that's what
more pratfalls, less of your saying, societal dude. Analyses from yeah. your perspective as a cishet male.
Yeah.
Telling people who is and is not a woman.
Right.
Like, okay. It's like when Joe Biden was like, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black.
Right.
Oh,
right,
shut geez. The fuck up, fool. We got something for your ass, too.
I can't stand, too, is like a lot of these comics, too, will say things like, why would you listen to us? Like, we're comedians. And it's like, you keep, you know, positioning yourself as someone that knows what the fuck they're talking about. Like, you're,
right.
you know,
right.
like you're point making. Like, right. that's why right. people are listening to you.
Yeah. And I think it's I really challenge people, for people who are Dave Chappelle fans, and I've had a few of them reach out to me because of our perspective on this whole incident, is to really consider what you are casually just laughing off as not harmful, right. because maybe you are in a position socioeconomically, racially or whatever to not understand that shit like that is what keeps people down. Is what keeps things from progressing forward and having a better outcome yeah. or life. Like when, you know, I think most people can look at racial stereotypes and understand that they're harmful, but you have to begin to evolve your thinking a bit to understand how large this world is and how varied people's experiences and identities are. And like, why the fuck are you caping for somebody who's making someone feel bad? That doesn't, yeah. that's not, that doesn't track. And I'm if people in the trans community are saying this is violence, this is offensive, I think I don't want to be subjected to this. Why the fuck are other people be like, no, they don't know what they're talking about? Yeah, that's not yeah. your place to determine that.
This actually brings us to a story that I've been teasing for a month now, but that we keep not getting to because I was waiting for the perfect time to bring it up. It's the story that super producer Dramos put in the doc about a study that shows that 2.6% of people have aphantasia, meaning they don't possess the ability to create pictures in their mind's eye. And oftentimes they don't realize this. They just think that people are being poetic when they talk about like being able to envision things. But this Vice article consists of an interview with somebody who has this. And the reason that I think it relates to what you're talking about with the Chappelle thing is they mentioned that people get like really defensive and kind of aggressive when they explain that they have this. So the Vice reporter asks, have you always known the way you thought was significantly different to other people? And then the person with aphantasia says, A friend said that a friend of theirs was Greek, but had lived in England for 10 years, and they were wondering whether he thought in English or in Greek. And until that moment, I had no idea that anyone thought in languages at all. The same goes for mental images. When people said a mental picture, I didn't realize they were being literal. I thought it was poetic. When I found out it wasn't, a bit of poetry of the world disappeared. I've only known for a few years, so it's taken some time to get used to the notion that not everyone thinks the same way. And then they talk about how people get aggro about them. And the vice reporter is like, why would that bother people? And they say, it strikes me that by mentioning that I don't think in pictures or in words, I'm somehow attacking their approach. The fact that there is another way makes people uncomfortable. Everyone is always asking me questions like, can't you tell me what your dad looks like? And the reporter's like, can't you tell me what your dad looks like? And they're like, nah, I know what my dad looks like. I know what my entire family looks like. But the only reason I could tell you what color my dad's eyes are is because I checked once when someone asked me. And, you know, I think this ties back to people's like inability to process the violence that trans people feel around the Dave Chappelle special. I think it ties back to even the Havana Syndrome story and the fact that like people are so, first of all, aggressive and like certain, oh, they must be making it up. Or then when the people themselves are accused of like, you know, not having had the actual attack, get super defensive, is because we are super aggressive and like kind of counterintuitively and illogically aggressive when it comes to the idea that other human beings don't think and process the world in the same way that we do.
Right, yeah.
It's like really troubling to people in a way that I feel like I see it everywhere. Once I read this article, I was like, oh, that's, we are like so uncomfortable with that idea.
And insecurity is like directly tied to anger about things, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's obvious. Like I feel like once I started realizing that, I could see it in other people too. Like when I see, right, you know, whatever it is, I'm like, oh, you're incredibly insecure about something.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's how it comes out.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just like we kind of built a world that relies on the illusion that we have control over,
yeah,
like all our faculties, and that we all think the same. And like if somebody commits a crime, they have done that on purpose, like thinking the same thoughts that we're thinking as we imagine them committing that crime. And, you know, that therefore blame them for their actions. And yeah, there's just, it's so much of the world relies on this illusion and this like misconception. And then, you know, anytime like somebody explains that their brain doesn't work exactly the same as somebody else, or, you know, that their experience has led them to see something completely differently than you, it just causes people like to freak out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you read that that study, did it fuck with you a little bit also? But you were like, can I think of images? I was like, for a second, I read it this morning. I was like, oh, God, picture a candle. I got it.
Right.
I got it, right?
Like, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know what a candle looks like. Yeah, there's, I think, you know, it's just the same way, like with, especially we saw with the uprisings last summer around, you know, all the police killings that were happening, is that suddenly white people were caught in a moment and be like, what do you, like, it was like, wait, there's another way to look at this, rather than being less empathetic or understanding of like how oppression works. And then suddenly it's to get defensive about it and defend your, because it's, for many people, it's hard to look at your belief system and say, yo, that's fucking, that actually, I need to throw that piece out. That's actually not helping me. It's actually going to hold me back. And it's running counter to where the rest of the world is.
Yeah.
I had very many points of evolution in my own understanding of race, gender identity, and things like that. And it truly took me, you have to arrive at a place where you have to think, A, am I a flawed person? Or do I have things that I'm insecure about or different about me that I would hope I'm living in a world where those things don't matter, where those are not vectors to terrorize me emotionally? And can I be around people that are understanding? And if I do believe that's the world that I want to live in, then it is incumbent on me to also treat every other person in situation like that. Because if you get selective, then it's only going to, it doesn't lead to increased understanding.
Buddy, dude, 100%. I even thinking about like comedy, like I've been doing it for 10 years. I started in Pittsburgh. Like I didn't grow up in like the most like culturally diverse town, and like going to Austin, which is like a very liberal place. I remember getting there and like doing jokes, and like other like a great friend of mine, Kath Barbadoro, another comedian, came up to me after a show one time and was like you're super funny, but that one joke is like super misogynist. And I was like, really? I was like, I don't know if I mean it that way. And she was like yeah, like the laughs you're getting on it, like they're like kind of like mean laughs. And dude, it stuck with me so much. And I remember just having a moment where I was like, oh, I don't want that at all.
Right.
I was like, I always felt like, but I always felt like open to like evolving past those things.
Yeah.
And thankful for the people in my life too, that were just totally like, hey, like we'll talk about it real quick. And you know,
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I think like, so at that moment you were able to imagine the world from a different perspective than your own and evolve your perspective to include that perspective. And I feel like the, you know, a lot of these comedians who now are just like trying to start a cult are like, they get told of a different perspective and they just kind of clamp down and choose to not let that in and instead to fight against it and try to like get people to see the world through their eyes, I guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah. In a very culty way that seems damaging.
Well, yeah. And a lot of people are stuck on the fact that they were probably getting a lot of laughs when they were kids in the 90s by being the meanest motherfucker who was able to rephrase bullying shit in funny ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a lot of it, man, I used to get so many laughs, like just going off on somebody's looks or like, ah, your mom, you know, like just mean shit. But people were more like, oh shit, he went there in a creative way. And I was like, ah, I'm the funniest motherfucker that ever lived. And then you realize, shit, man, I'm just really good at being mean in a way that isn't traditionally mean. And it's a way that can make people laugh because we, all of us are stunted kids and not able to extend empathy or sympathy in a direction. And then you have to have a reckoning with that where I was like, fuck, man, like, I'm not really funny if the only thing I can do is just be like kind of mean.
Yeah.
Like just describe some shit about someone being different or ugly or something like that. That's not a joke. And I think that's why a lot of people too, who have a lot of like jokes or material that are sort of come from that philosophy of like, yo, I'm just teasing, man. I'm just just fucking poking fun, man. It's nothing. It's comedy. Those are the people who really go, what the fuck's happening, man? Like, This is everything's completely changed. It's like, well, no, like people get older. And as people get older, we have more access to experiences and ways to process our experiences. Be like, oh, that all that shit I used to laugh at, that was actually really foul. That was actually contributing to someone else feeling like absolute shit about themselves. Yeah. And that's not the spirit of what comedy is.
Yeah. And the ones who are like, I'm just joking, like, what, it's just a joke, I'm just a comedian, don't pay attention to me, are the ones who, when that premise is challenged, they're like, they get very serious
suddenly turns into
white supremacy and misogyny,
free speech conversation.
Exactly. If your material isn't actually pointing out the absurdity of something, like, and there's a, you have actually a, from a position of like you're morally correctly pointing out an absurd power imbalance, which is what great comedy can do.
Yeah.
You know, you have to ask yourself, like, what is it really saying?
Well, but I feel like to them and a lot of these people, too, they are pointing out that absurdity. It for them, it's like they are thinking critic, but it's because they're so threatened.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
They don't want it to change. And like, I just know, dude, I know these fuckers, like a lot of them. And it's like, yeah, they think that they're the ones thinking critically, and we're all like sheep about it.
You couldn't ask for a worse laboratory to extract your data from.
Oh my god, yeah.
Being on a stage with a microphone saying something and people laugh.
Oh,
how the fuck
to people who already like you and you already have an investment.
How the fuck are you going to move past that?
No, you're not. No, it's the thing that makes you feel like a god. You know, you're just going to be enabled the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
To keep saying those things. Yeah.
Right. And that's what it's all about. It was like, well, I'm getting positive feedback from this.
I'm guessing, and
that's the same thing Dave Chappelle said at the Hollywood Bowl when he premiered his documentary there. He went up there and he was like, oh, I'm glad y'all love me. And people were like, ah. And he's like, if this is what being canceled feels like, then I fucking love it.
Right.
But
yeah.
you are in a bro, that's only a couple thousand people there.
Yeah.
You have a lot of other people. And I think a lot of people also try and say it's like this noisy minority of people. Well, that may be true that maybe mathematically people that are offended by homophobia or transphobia may not be at a global majority.
Yeah.
But it's not an insignificant amount of people. And I think that's what's also very dismissive about the whole thing.
A very literal bubble that he was in. Like people paying to see you.
With no cell phone.
Like, right.
Right. Yeah.
Take your cell phone, put it in a bag. Yeah. Sounds everything's above board.
Yeah. So you know you're on the right side when you're espousing views that Vladimir Putin would agree with.
Yeah.
You're crushing it, man.
Yeah. Putin's like, he was in the audience at the Hollywood Bowl. Yeah. Steven Seagal. They're like,
they cut to them real quick. Yeah.
That imbalance of power thing is so true. And it's why, to talk about something we mentioned earlier, why slipping on a banana peel is the best joke, because it's the ultimate imbalance of power between human beings and gravity, you know?
Well put.
When you think about it.
Well put.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all just slipping on peels, man.
We're all just slipping on peels, dude.
It's all about sticking the landing and getting back up.
Oh, my God. You guys should teach a comedy class. I like it. Good. Yeah. Comedy philosophy 101.
Well, I mean, because it's true. You look at Chappelle's early shit. He was able to, people be like, oh, these jokes are racist. Well, he was actually able to use racism to broaden, to bring up a larger point about the racist dynamics within the United States. And when that, and I think he's completely just, I don't know, maybe that's no longer important to him. But I feel like for someone, again, who says like he really cares about trans people, then listen to them.
Yes.
Listen to them.
Yeah.
And don't be dismissive. And just because you have one person's family and another trans comedian that has your back, that doesn't negate the feelings of many other people. And if you're truly there, if like any person who wants to claim they're an ally of any, you know, liberation movement for people, then you have to really be aware of this kind of shit and know what you are fighting for and fighting against and what progress looks like and what the slowing of progress looks like.
Yeah. It's just weird because Chappelle's never said something that aged poorly before, like when he told us that we should give Donald Trump a chance. That was...
Dude, he pulled back on that one, what, like a couple months later or something?
That's what I'm like, hoping that happens.
I don't think so. Three specials in a row now. No,
he's fucking money. So it's going to be fuck you.
I mean, at the end of that special, he did say something like, he said he's done doing the jokes until, you know, whatever he said, until I know that we're both laughing together. And it's like, well, that's not going to happen. So you're just done doing the jokes now. Cool.
And I'm sorry, what was the joke?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get.
But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.